NAPA Auto Parts wants to know, what makes today's new cars so smart? Is it the questionably useful Wi-Fi connectivity? Could it be the giant, confusing touchscreens you should probably stop playing with while driving? Or perhaps voice-activated everything that never seems to listen very well? The answer, of course, is none of the above. Click the banner to see the smartest car available today.
Log Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Well, hello and welcome to the 10th episode of the Being Brilliant radio show. This is your host, Amy Hackett-Jones, happiness and high performance coach for being brilliant in the way you both live and lead your life and those around you. You can find me at www.amyhackett.jones.com. The Being Brilliant radio show is a deep and impactful look at what it takes to be brilliant. The show invites you, my listeners, to step into the very essence of who you are being as you show up to life. My guests bring a combination of ancient wisdom teachings coupled with practical tools and essential life and leadership skills translated into actionable strategies so that you, our listeners, may step into being the very best version of yourselves. My interviewees are high performers, thought leaders, game changers, soul activators, pioneers, dreamers, adventurers, wayseers, visionaries, as well as friends and family. Those whom I believe live brilliantly and who travel magically through life, shining their light so others may do the same. Now, today, I am very excited to welcome a very dear friend, Mike Dixon, to the show. Mike is all about generosity. In fact, he's recently written a book called Our Generous Gene, which we'll be delving into in this show. And Mike is really quite something when it comes to fundraising and it comes to generosity and what the word means. He's a huge philanthropist. He became the CEO of WizKids Foundation, and later in 2013 started up the Rainmaker Foundation, which we'll be delving into as well. And Desmond Tutu, none other than Desmond Tutu, is the patron of the Rainmaker Foundation. Welcome to the show, Mike. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Very good.
We met a year or so ago, through my mother, actually, who met you in Suffolk, didn't she? And she recommended we both had TED Talks in common, so we
she
should...
She said that I had to meet you. It turned out to be a good decision.
Well, it did, indeed. So what I'd like to look at today is focusing on the word generous, because your book is all about generosity, your life is all about generosity. And I'd like to just start taking a little look back at how that came about. How did the whole sort of generous gene idea come about for you? I know when you started WizKids, what was it that inspired you, that set that spark run flying for you when you first started WizKids?
Well, I think when we started WizKids, so WizKids is a charity that helps disabled children get around, whiz about, by providing them with sports and powered wheelchairs, and specially adapted electric wheelchairs. And up until the time that I had started that with my wife and a friend, I don't think I'd ever done anything useful in my life. But I was challenged to run the London Marathon one year.
Right.
And it was a Christmas drinks party, and I'd had too many glasses of wine, and I thought, yes, I'll do that. And I went back after Christmas. And New Year came, and a man sent me a training schedule to how to get run the London Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And it said roughly, you've got 12 weeks to do this. You need to start. I was a bit shocked by this. In simple words, my bluff had been called.
Oh, no.
I bought some running shoes, and I went off, and I started running with a friend. As the time got nearer and nearer the start of the London Marathon, I became more and more scared of the whole thing. And I'd seen a young girl go into a shop that I owned then in Covent Garden, and she'd been in one of these electric powered wheelchairs, and she'd gone up to the counter and pushed the chair up and bought something and disappeared off around Covent Garden in a mobility aid. So I thought, well, if I'm going to struggle around the marathon, 26.2 miles, and do something heroic like that, then I must go and do it for a purpose. So mm-hmm. I'll buy a wheelchair for a disabled child. And I didn't know anything about disability. I knew nothing about problems with mobility. But I rang up the people who made these things. And I said, how much are they? And they said, they're £3,500. And then I said in my sort of, I was about 40 then, so it's a ghastly sort of executive tone, well, we need a disabled child. And they said they had one, a young girl who got cerebral palsy, and she lived in the middle of England, and she'd been badly let down, so why didn't I run for her or buy her that? So I went to meet this girl, and the much give me courage is to give her, and I was terribly, profoundly moved. I met this young girl called Sammy. She was 12 years old. She has, obviously still has, cerebral palsy, and she could hardly speak properly.
Gosh.
And she couldn't move. And so I was very moved, and it's a long story, but anyway, I asked her for a photo of her, came back to London, gave it to Ricky, my running mate. We sent it out to all of our friends and asked and sponsor. And in those days, we raised £9,500, a lot of money. And we got to the start of the London Marathon. We set off with no idea what we were doing. And 6.5 hours later, I finally finished.
Yeah,
it
wonderful.
It actually cleared all the traffic cones and everything. But critically, we'd raised all this money for this young girl. And we went and we saw her take possession of this wheelchair. And the freedom it gave her was wonderful. And it was then that I realized, you know, almost by mistake, that you know, being generous to someone else actually made you feel quite good about life as well. And this was
absolutely
to grow. And then 1 year later, my wife and I started with kids. And now it's 25 years old. And it's unbelievably, it's taken over £100 million.
I was reading that. £100 million and over 20,000 disabled children.
Yeah.
And now able to live more independently with a sense of freedom.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so obviously it had an impact on girls like Sammy, but it completely revolutionized mine, because up to then I'd been a fairly useless, focused business person with not much thought of anybody else at all. And so we started with kids and grew and grew and grew.
That's just amazing. So you started this journey, and then you built with kids. It kept going. So then what did you do along the way? What did you do in addition to or beyond with kids?
Well, eventually I started running with kids full time. It became a full time job. I was the founder. I became the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And back to the generous theme, it really was true that I began to notice almost subliminally that every time people did something amazing or ran a marathon or jumped out of an aeroplane or companies became involved, every time they did something for to help a disabled child who couldn't move, in effect what happened was that they felt wonderful about having done it. So the family, the child got the benefit. But the people who did it
giving.
Got to it. And sometimes some people said to me, you know, this has probably been the most useful thing I've done all year. You know, this has been the best thing that's done all year. But I feel I've done it for someone else. And so this whole idea, which is expressed actually in the poem at the beginning of the book, you know, the more you give, the more you get,
mm-hmm.
the more you laugh, the less you fret.
Yes.
And so on. And it's by a wonderful woman called Helen Steiner-Reich, who's American. And I think the last four lines say something, the more you find that life is good and friends are kind, for only what we give away enriches us from day to day. And then, of course, classically, you discover that all sorts of other people in the world knew this way before you
did. Suddenly.
Martin Luther King's given talks about this, as you say, like this business about helping other people, which, as I say, we'll come back to later on, making you feel you have a sense of purpose. It's just a complete no-brainer.
It is. And I've come across that a lot as well in the coaching work that I do. It's always when I get to that moment when I feel that my clients, you can see it in their eyes. You just see the light go on. They get this aha moment and they suddenly get a breakthrough or have a new idea about something or they shift their perception on something and it shifts the rest of their life for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it's in those moments when I feel like I'm giving most.
Mm.
And because of that, I'm also receiving most because they get their aha moment and I get the, actually happened.
Well, you've officially woken them up.
Yes. And as they wake up, I wake up more, so it's mutually beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wonderful. So tell us a little bit more then about what you did next, the Rainmaker Foundation. I know you began that in 2013 and you have an incredible skill to build connections and networks and foster those friendships. And Desmond Tutu is the patron, which is phenomenal. He's one of my idols.
I know. He's a very, very lovely, obviously special, wonderfully wise man.
Yes.
I suppose the journey through to meeting Desmond, I mean, it started... We did succession planning at WizKids, which is when the creators of something started and then handed on
Very
to somebody
important.
Else to take it to another level,
yep.
which I've also just done with Rainmaker.
Great.
And so we did succession planning,
yep.
and I started advising families and companies about how to support charities. And I started writing, and this is the abridged version. I wrote first book I ever wrote about generosity. Which was given away at TED in 2010. Everybody who went to TED, whether they wanted it or not, got a copy of the book.
Just a little pause for a moment there. Mike did a TED talk in 2010. What was it called?
Enough. What is enough?
What is enough? That's it. I recommend you go to TED.com and look up Mike Dixon, What is Enough? It's a great talk about enoughness. What
enough.
Is enough?
Enoughness, yeah. Anyway... It was just after the financial crash, you know,
right.
and TED prides itself, of course, on being, you know, spreading ideas worth spreading or whatever it is. And so the thought that you should actually live a more generous life and help other people and all that, and that it made you happier and that you didn't need all the crap that we all buy all the time, was received as rocket science. And I became a sort of thought leader, as you would believe.
As I would describe
and,
you, yes.
So we have this book, and like all these things, it's all serendipity, isn't it? The Rainmaker Foundation, we started the Rainmaker Foundation in January 2012 to encourage people to be generous. So on the one hand, there's a group of people called Rainmakers who are people who are dedicated to having a life outside their day jobs. You know, they are useful. Of different levels of wealth. They don't have to be terribly rich. Some of them are. And then on the other side, we've got some charities that we choose to support, and they basically match make. So we inspire the people who've got enough, if you like, to get a grip, famous Mike expression,
get a grip.
And to help charities all over the world. And it's gone terribly well. And one thing I would say before... start on Rainmaker again is that when I started WizKids with these other two, it was really very successful. It did really well. And I thought, it just shows you how stupid you can be, really. I thought that people who started charities were unique specimens of, you know, of humankind.
Uh-huh.
And of course, so I thought starting a charity was actually quite a you know, cool thing to have done, and you know, you should be proud. And of course, then I realized as I woke up that actually, literally, millions of people all over the world have started charities, whether they're helping the poor in India or mm-hmm. saving animals in Africa or in the Amazon, or, you know, victims of domestic violence, human rights. I mean, there's millions of, so far be it from being very clever and rather talented and desperately unique, I was one of millions who were fighting all over the world to save the planet or to
well, maybe you're all rather clever and desperately unique. Maybe you're all rather clever and desperately unique in your own ways.
The point I'm trying to make is that I think actually I thought it was terribly clever and unique, but actually it's not. And that's what I've discovered, because there are people all over the world that Rainmaker supports.
Mm.
Last year, we helped over 200 different charities all over the world.
Gosh.
And they're all run by heroes. They're all run by the most amazing people who are, for example, fighting to get people out of Guantanamo or out of death row, or people who are saving the environment in the Amazon, or people who are campaign to eliminate FGC. There's just, never mind frontline poverty people helping disadvantaged young people, people helping disabled people. And recently we've been involved with a lot of mental health charities.
Yes.
And so there's millions and millions of people all over the world who actually chosen to live their lives helping other people. It's not unique at all. It's rather wonderful. So my job is to wake up the people who've got much too much and try and turn their attention towards people who desperately need their support.
And I love that you take them on a journey from success to significance.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of very successful people, and not all of them are happy, obviously. Some are doing brilliantly, but there's also people who sort of hanker after that sense or that need for a sense of significance.
Mm.
And I think you've bridged that gap brilliantly.
It's a good line, isn't it?
Success, it is, absolutely. I love it. It's really catchy.
And sometimes I give talks say, you know, you're very successful, but is there any point in you at all?
Yeah, love it.
And in fact, one of the first slides goes out, what is the point of view?
And, such a great question.
And this very week, we've got a family. The man's done incredibly well, and he's now got quite sufficient money. And he and his wife, I mean, we've persuaded him and his wife and his family, and four young people, to create a charitable foundation. We're beginning to take them, literally starting this week, on the journey of what they're interested in and what they're going to give away and how they're going to be involved. And so on. So, you know, it's great because they're going to become really, I call them apprentice philanthropists. They're not very nice people.
Apprentice philanthropists.
Yeah.
And it does give them that sense of direction, a renewed sense of purpose, and a renewed sense of energy and of giving. And as you say at the beginning, the more you give, the more you get.
Mm, absolutely. And so, you know, we started Rainmaker, and it's gone really well. And I'm very pleased and proud to tell you that I managed to find someone else to take that on to.
Great.
We've done succession planning again.
Great.
And to your question, which you asked about half an hour ago about Desmond Tutu.
Yeah.
you know, you do these things. I met his granddaughter
mm-hmm.
in the most extraordinary circumstances. And I also discovered that one of my close friends, in fact, one of the guys who started WizKids, I discovered this 20 years later, that he was the godfather to Desmond Tutu's children.
Goodness me.
So I wrote a letter which roughly went, "Dear Archbishop Desmond Tutu, I'm starting this charity to help spread generosity. Please will you become the patron, love, Mike." And he wrote back a letter saying, "Dear Mike, I don't usually do this sort of thing, but I've been told you're all right, so I will love the arch." And I'm slightly laying it down, but he became the patron of Rainmaker, because obviously he agreed with the aims of encouraging people to help other people, but principally because two members of his family told him to. Which just goes to show you can get away with anything, really, doesn't it?
It does.
And he's wonderful, as you imagine.
Yes, I can imagine.
He came to London 2 years ago and gave a talk to 100 Rainmakers. And he was absolutely spellbinding, and none of them moved for about 30 minutes. They were completely transfixed.
Gosh.
And, you know, to be in his company, like being in the company of a, you know, he's one of the global, world, wise men.
One of the elders.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Really, really lovely, special man. And so that sort of, I suppose, more than anything, it gave Rainmaker cred. Instead of Mike and his chums creating something to change the world, suddenly somebody grown up, but it's all right.
Grown up, I love it.
I know that.
Oh wow, that's just fantastic. So you're taking this generous theme now in a new direction, because you've done your succession planning for the Rainmaker Foundation, and you've written your book, which we're going to delve into now. It's called Our Generous Gene by Mike Dixon, and the website is ourgenerousgene.com. Mike even has a Twitter account at ourgenerousgene or at Dixon Mike, where you can ask all sorts of questions and read into it. But just tell me a little bit about the book before we delve into it, because I've found a couple of my favorite quotes already in it. So we'll read them out. But just tell me a little bit about the book and how it came about, and what you intend to do with it.
Well, it started as an attempt to update the previous book, which was given away at TED, which was called Please Take One Step. So we tried to update it. But to cut a long story short, so the facts and the latest information and stories. And to cut a long story short, it turned out to be rewriting half the book.
Oh.
And again, my wonderful wife did most of the research and a lot of the writing about the new parts of it. But in essence, we took the central idea, which was that we're all naturally generous. And we all have a generous gene. In other words, unlike Richard Dawkins and Charles Darwin said, you know, that man was naturally selfish, but they wrote The Survival of the Fittest, the selfish gene, but they could never explain why people would, for example, give up their lives for others in the war camp or dive into the river to help a child that was drowning selflessly. And so we started researching this, and the key thing is that from back in the times of Confucius and the teachings of Ubuntu in Africa and the behaviors and teachings of all Amazonian tribes and the teachings of all the faiths in all over the world, like for thousands of years, there have been two key values. And the first is that everybody has an obligation to look after, to treat someone else as they would want to be treated themselves. So that's a version of the golden rule. You're supposed to treat other people as you would like to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is that every single one of these societies and faiths places an obligation on you to help people less fortunate than yourself.
Wonderful.
So, they've got lots of other things in common, but those are the two key things. And so this isn't something Mike made up. This has been going on for like years. This is how we're supposed to behave. And of course, in communities where we've just been in the Amazon, they're more interdependent than independent. They work together, etc. And we could do a whole interview about that subject. But in essence, we're supposed to, A, good to each other, and we're supposed to help people who are less fortunate than ourselves. And so, as I said, it just happens to be true. And what's happened in the last few decades is that we've been driven witless. We've been told that we must become independent, not interdependent, that we must stand on our own two feet, we must be just independent. And more than that, We must buy everything that moves. We've been marketed
to
buy all sorts of rubbish.
Yeah.
That upon cool, calm reflection, we don't really want and quite often don't, well, we certainly don't need, and we don't often even use.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is friend of the bigger car, the bigger house, the bigger loan, the clothes, a new laptop. Our phones all expire, as we know, or we're told in about 6 months. Everything breaks down.
Within 6 months.
And so the husband is huge, deeply clever, effort to market everything to us. And so we've been driven to become independent and self-sufficient and all that nonsense, you know, stand on our own 2 feet. And at the same time, we've been sold all sorts of rubbish we don't really want and or need. Me, I suppose, is honestly. And so this natural generosity of spirit has sort of been swept quietly aside. And that's about it. And so the final premise of the book is that in order to solve the problems that we face now as a world and as a society, we should actually go backwards. We should look after each other. We should look after the tribes to try and save the Amazon. We should work together to deal with the environment and ban trafficking and so on. And of course, a lot of people are hopelessly optimistic about this because now with the growth of social media and activism, people are actually getting things done.
Yes.
It's not the end of the known world as we know it. You know, it is possible to rescue people from being hanged. It is possible to get people home. So it's a very exciting time to be, but it's not going to carry on like that. We all pretend that we're all fabulously independent. Mm. We all keep on buying nonsense.
Couldn't agree more.
The end of the sermon.
No, you're absolutely right. And this whole sort of marketing gimmick, I really believe that people are beginning to wake up to this and to feel a deeper sense of belonging and community, and that, you know, there is this drive for independence, as you say, but bit by bit people are waking up more and more, and it's because of people like you and because of the books you write and the talks you give that the stories are being told. And we've been told certain stories or marketing stories for so long now that as we change the script of the story ourselves, it's almost like we're changing the thread of that story of our community back to, as you say, back to these ancestral tribes that live and thrive by being interdependent, by singing and dancing around the fire, by being together.
Exactly. And when we recently went up the Amazon in our own little boat, the crew and a cook and a couple of guides, and we visited about 8 different communities in the banks of a tributary of the Amazon, miles from anywhere. And they welcomed us and they did shows and plays and all that. And the thing that struck us forcibly about each community was that they were all, they were a community. They were unbelievably worked together to do everything together. And the other thing is they were incredibly happy.
Yes.
And in fact, Juno said to me on the plane on the way home, she said, you know, it's ridiculous. They've all got what we all want.
Yes.
They're all quite happy out there. They don't want another Frigidaire. They just want to be left alone. The only thing they do want is they want education.
They do indeed, and they do all pull together in the most incredible way. So talking about stories, I know that your book, Our Generous Gene, it's about ordinary people who have found, mostly to their own amazement, that they can and are changing the world.
No.
In their own part of it and for the better. And more and more of us are already creating, we've sort of been talking about this, an alternative good news world through social media and that sort of thing, working together and sharing ideas that support and sustain each other and the planet and shifting our culture forward. And, you know, these books, TED Talks, which is just, you know, it's become such a prolific platform now for people to talk about new ideas and concepts and possibilities and breaking down boundaries and limited beliefs that we had about things, about what's possible. So I just want to take one quote from the book to start off with that is actually from Desmond Tutu.
Okay, good.
And it says, "We're all different. You can do things that I can't do. I can do things that you can't do. And that's just fine. in our African culture, so we're here talking about the tribe. In our African culture, there is something very difficult to put into English, Ubuntu, which is what Mike has already referred to. Ubuntu speaks about the essence of being human, which is just perfect for this show, being brilliant, being human. We say that a person is a person through other persons, that it is impossible to be human as a solitary individual, that we are created for interdependence, and my humanity is caught up in your humanity. I need you to be all you can be in order for me to become all I can be. Forgiveness is therefore not altruistic, but is instead the best form of self-interest. Conversely, a person who dehumanizes another is also dehumanized. And that was Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who was the chair of South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission back then. So forgiveness is all about generosity.
Yes, I think he, of course, you say, chaired the South African Truth and Reconciliation campaign, but he also experienced forgiveness firsthand. One of the members of his household was murdered several years ago, and his daughter speaks movingly about that. His daughter is also a minister. Anyway, they wrote a book about, came out about 2 years ago, which was a practical guide to forgiveness.
Oh, wonderful.
And, they are an authority on it. And I think from my limited knowledge of it, you know, I think the two most powerful acts of generosity is forgiveness. It's really, really difficult to forgive, And what you're supposed to do is to make up your mind to forgive. In other words, it's your choice and so on. It's actually really difficult. It's the biggest, most difficult act of generosity. And the other one is, I think, is giving your time.
Yes.
Making time to people, not just people you like, everybody. I think a group of us, we always, always make time for anybody. And in fact, there's another very wise guru called Satish Kumar, who he talked about generosity, and he said, "I always make time." He said, "I have my day. I meditate. Mm-hmm. I eat. I do things during the day, but I can always find time for a person who wants to see me. It might not be at the time they want to see me, but I will always find time for people." And the ability to spend some time with somebody and give them a hug, or put an arm around them, or cheer them up, or whatever else, or even just help them get a job, is just such a precious gift.
Of course, it's such costs nothing. A huge gift, yeah.
But giving your time and forgiveness is, I think, probably two of the best forms of generosity.
I just saw on social media a couple of days ago about a guy in New York who has set himself up, I forget what he calls himself, but it's something like the hugging coach.
Okay.
And yes, he's talking about that, but his whole thing is he spends time with people and gives them a hug.
Mm.
He talks them through things, but he actually gives them a hug. And there are various scientific research done into hugging and the benefits of it and how it raises your endorphin levels and all this sort of thing. But it was just quite incredible, just that sense of giving someone a hug, and especially in this independent world, how we can become more interdependent again. And it is about the physicality, about human touch, about being present to people, as you say, giving them of your time, which is one of the most precious things.
Hugging is heroic behavior. Hugging is very good for everybody. And you can tell a lot about people, which is another subject altogether, about how they hug. You know?
Yes.
They have a hug, as in hug, and relax into, or they hug, bolt upright.
At a distance.
Or at a distance, or, you know.
Yeah.
Hugging is good. You could call yourself Amy Hackett Jones, the hugging coach.
The hugging coach.
That's an idea.
There we
Not
go.
Not necessarily my best one, but.
Just to finish off the point about forgiveness and Desmond Tutu's family, how do you say his daughter's name? Umpo.
Yeah.
Yes. She says, ultimately, there is nothing that is unforgivable. That's pretty huge.
I think it's probably true.
Yes.
But just really difficult. Really, really difficult. It's sort of fatuous, forgiveness.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you won't talk to somebody because they've done something you think they've done to you, but they haven't really done it. And you don't bother to ask them and so on. But proper forgiveness, I mean, imagine the wonderful stories of forgiveness, in prison or war camps.
Mm.
I mean, it's a really, really difficult thing to do, but we admire people who do.
You certainly do. I have one more quote from your book.
Okay, come on.
It's from Deepak Chopra.
Yeah.
Happiness. I'm all about happiness, high performance and happiness.
Yeah.
Happiness is a function of fulfillment. When people are able to express their creativity, when they have meaning and purpose in life, when they have meaningful relationships and are able to make other people happy, in general, they are happy then. Focusing beyond self, happiness increases helpfulness. Those who feel good do good, but doing good also makes one feel good. And just coming back to the family you were talking about just a moment ago, the family that you're moving in this process from success to significance, and you're bringing the whole family together. So not only are they strengthening their family relations, they're working together on something creative, creating a project together. They're also focusing beyond the self, so therefore their happiness is increasing because they're also helping other people. So that happiness that they send out will also come back twofold. So it's just an example of that in motion.
And that's important. So when I met this particular family, I met the man first because he was the one who made the money and wanted to move into becoming useful, and we got on quite well. So then I said, I would like to meet your wife, and that whether she was on board as well.
Yep.
And she's a delight.
Wonderful.
And they've got four children, and one of them is sort of 16 or 17, and she's going to come and do work experience in one of these charities. So, and they're going to have, monthly or bi-monthly meetings with the family about what the family give away. They're going to start educating their children young, which is actually quite simple to do, and it's a system for it, but they're going to take it as a family activity.
Mm.
Imagine being their son or daughter or whatever else. I mean, they'll all grow up to be disturbed like we all have been, but meanwhile, they'll have grown up. Well, the fact that their parents said you have to help other people.
Yeah.
They'll have their own storyboard.
So, there we go. Their own storyboard. And again, talking about story, just the impact of telling stories.
Hmm.
And then you just imagine the stories that they will tell their kids of the generous acts that they've done and the knock-on effect. Wonderful. So before we go into the next phase, I just want to look at the end of one of your chapters here, the end of your second chapter, you talk about how to develop your generous gene.
Mm.
And I just want to share this with our readers because I want them all, always to go away with something that's applicable that they can go away with and start practicing tonight or tomorrow.
Sure, yeah.
So you've got four or five different points here. And the first one is live Ubuntu. We've just been talking about that.
Yeah.
So find your place in the world through what you do for others and encourage everyone younger than you to do the same.
Exactly. I mean, I suppose it's sort of the concurrent phrase for Ubuntu, which is not one word. It's everybody needs to get out more.
Right.
Need to look around you.
Yes.
At other people. And
look up from your mobile phone.
They're up to their ears in trouble and chaos as well. And not worry all the time about your own desperately tough little life.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get out more.
Get out more. Live Ubuntu, get out more. The next one is start small and watch for the ripple effect. So keep tabs on the feedback you get when you do something kind, however small, or go out of your way to listen to help
then pause and think about how that makes you feel. Give yourself a pat on the back for developing your gender. Rewarding yourself is important.
Absolutely. But I think you probably know it. When you've done something actually useful for other people without doing it so it's good for you.
Yeah.
When you do something genuinely generous for someone else. There are 8 levels of giving in the Jewish faith.
Oh, wow.
And there are different levels of giving. So, first of all, you give in somebody, but the highest form of giving in the Jewish faith is you give to somebody and you don't know who it is and they don't know who you are.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
It's the absolute pinnacle of giving. So, and all the other levels lead up to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I give something to you, but you know about it, so you feel, and so on. So,
yeah.
But anyway, the highest bit is, you know, that you give something to someone and they don't know it's you and you don't know who it is.
I love that.
It's difficult too.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're working away with ego there to shut it up, to just allow it to, you know, it doesn't need patting on the back.
No, exactly. Definitely.
Your third point is about being proactive. So reach out to help when you see help is needed. Back off when it's not and listen without judging. And that's a great skill to develop. That's a great generous gene to develop, is listening without judgment.
Yes, well, you do a lot of this work and you will know that probably 9/10 of your time is spent listening to people and or encouraging them.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And it's the inverse of transmitting. Most people transmit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been thinking about this, it's terribly important, I think I'm terribly important, but actually that's not what people want to hear. People want to, they want to be listened to.
Yep.
And that's the foundation of empathy.
Yep.
So, you know, it's like, is that, I think it's Stephen Covey said, seek first to understand and then to be understood, the other way around, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But it's the same principle, you know, when discussing something with someone who's clearly having a hard time, shut up. You know?
Yeah.
It's listen and watch.
Yeah.
Really important to watch too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Number 4 is to be open. Share your story and trust people. Be as authentic and true to yourself as it is possible and encourage others to be true to themselves too. This is hugely important, I believe.
Yeah. I think, well, this again speaks to the work you're doing. You've got to try and find what it is that makes someone excited, enthused, or most of all, the real them.
Mm.
And I don't know, I'm a bit outside my pace go, but I the number of people who spend their entire life trying to do something that they're not really suited for because they've been told they should, or because they persuaded themselves, you know, they'd probably be happier being gardeners than they would be chartered accountants. Gosh, that's another discussion.
Yes, I know. That's
survey. How many of the following 100 people you know are doing what they're interested in?
Or doing what they should
be doing. What they should be doing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably no more than 10.
Yeah.
You know, probably. It's frightening, isn't it?
It is, actually.
Terrifying. Life's difficult enough without spending it. You think of all the struggles and trials and tribulations that you have and I have doing what we want to do.
Yes.
It must be ghastly having trials and tribulations to do things
that you don't
really want to do. It must be nice. Yeah. It's a new business idea there.
There you go.
Amy, off you go.
Thank you for that one.
It's another good one.
And the last one here is learn to forgive. So we've already spoken about forgiveness, but really to wipe the slate clean, even when it's difficult, remembering that forgiveness is your choice to move forward and leave bitterness behind.
Brackets, open brackets. Easier said than done, close brackets.
Shall I edit that in there?
Yeah, yeah, then you can just put that into the next position. Indeed.
So, wonderful. That was all from Our Generous Gene by Mike Dixon.
And that's www.rgenerousgene.com. Be sure to check it out. Be sure to check out his TEDtalk.com, which you can find on TED.com. And you can search for Mike Dixon. And his talk was all about what is enough, which is a fascinating topic.
Thanks.
Because most of us believe that we're not enough.
Well, we're not enough, and we don't have enough. We could start, we could do one. We could do a course.
We could do it. There we go.
you could talk to them about being enough. And I could talk to them about not buying things they don't need. Enoughness.
Enoughness. I think there's something in that.
Yes.
Watch this space, everyone.
Exactly.
So you also have a song that inspires you.
I've got several.
You've got several. Let's pick one song that inspires you and gets you in your happy zone.
Well,
picks you up and...
I've forgotten most already, but you've got Let It Be, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's a good enough one to be going on with.
Music
songs inspire you all the time.
They do, don't they? And Let It Be is a wonderful one. So let's play this and then we'll talk about it afterwards. Here we go.
When I find myself in times of trouble, in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be.
Music, Lord, the Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom.
Well, that is such a feel-good song.
I know. just cheering up.
I know. It was just listening here at the end, just going, oh, my gosh. And just the whole thing about being, talking and being, you know, being more human, let it be. He's talking about let go of all the stuff that's out there and causing strife.
Absolutely.
So tell us why, what this song really means for you. What does it bring home to you? Why did you pick this one?
Well, I suppose it's in the words, isn't it? Just a sort of friend of get on with it, isn't it? Friend of that's what it's about. I mean, I think, you know, one of the, just, you know, let, well, I mean, we've been talking about this before, but letting the problems go away and just get on with it, I think is the key. And on that note, being proactive about life is pretty important. I mean, there are those who think and those who do. The wonderful quote from John Ruskin, who's one of my heroes, what we think or what we say or what we believe is in the end of little consequence. The only consequence is what we do.
Yeah.
You know? And I've become increasingly less generous about people who don't actually do things now. It's an extraordinary contradiction in terms.
Yeah, but so
proactivity.
Proactivity and with a cause, with a purpose, with significance.
And well, just even on little notes, going out of your way to help one person. You don't have to save the world. Just have to, as we said earlier, just have to get out more.
Yeah. Wonderful. That was Let It Be by the Beatles, which can be downloaded on iTunes. You can head on over, download and re-listen.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, there is one more story in your book that I absolutely love, and it's about a gentleman called Terry. And I'd just love you to share this story with the audience because it really is very powerful and it really encapsulates your whole sort of concept around generosity and what you're doing with this message.
Well, it actually encapsulates who is really. So my mother and father lived in a very small village in Somerset, and my father died first, as is the case, and then my mother lived independently for about another 25 years. And during all this time, the time they lived in this village, they had a gardener called Terry, who, in fairness to Terry, was one of the world's worst gardeners. He wasn't very good, and he was young and he wasn't very good, but he gardened my father and so on. And anyway, when my mother became older and older, Terry took it upon himself to come up and visit my mother, who was then entering her 90s.
Gosh.
Wasn't as mobile as she should be, living on her own. Couldn't change light bulbs, take out the rubbish, all that. So he took it on himself. And hardly ever been out of the village in which they lived. He took it upon himself to come up and see my mother twice a day, and particularly every evening, to make sure that she was safe, the cats were in, the channel that she wanted to watch on television was tuned in. Got her a hot water bottle, you know, all this sort of thing. Went, got her cigarettes when she'd run out of them. And he did this every single day of the year. Unbelievable.
Wow.
And for what amounted to about 4 years until she died, as she became gradually infirm. And on many occasions, you know, I said to him, Terry, you know, this is simply unbelievable. We live 120 miles away and you're in there every day looking after my mother. And I said, you know, we really must give you some money for this because, albeit, you know, you are the best gardener in the whole of Somerset, you know, you're giving up more of your time. And he always say, oh, no, I don't want anything like that. You know, he's speaking this broad Somerset accent. He absolutely refused to take money. For it at all.
Wow.
Absolutely refused. And then my mother died, and I actually spoke about him with her memorial service, said, you know, she used to him for everything. And then about 4 or 5 months ago, I went down to the village. I was down there, I went to see the grave. He popped up to the grave and he mowed the grass around it and so on.
Oh, bless him.
And he said, oh, I do miss her, you know. I do miss her. I loved her a lot. I really liked to help in there, you know, and all that. And it dawned on me that actually he was doing it because he wanted to.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing it because he felt sorry for the poor old lady living in a little house all on her own. That gave him a sense of purpose. And the relevance of the story is that it's just beautiful, simple.
Mm.
It's not constructed from desire. It's a man living in a village with not very much in the world who just decides to look after a little old lady.
And that's, like you say, it's a wonderfully simple story, but it's so powerful as well. And I'm really glad we had time to share that because it is simple and it's something from deep within. And it really resonates to that human level of being human and of giving and receiving. And just, you know, we have a few minutes left before we finish. I also wanted to tap into the business realm.
Mm-hmm.
And I read somewhere... that you had written to me, you shared that studies show that close to 80% of people are more likely to buy from companies that are giving back, companies that are exercising their generous gene.
Nowadays, most businesses, so on a business level, there's this thing called CSR, corporate social responsibility.
Yep.
Which up to 10 years ago was, they made great reports on and tagged it onto the annual accounts.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was all known as sort of PR fig leaf. But actually now it's not really possible to run a company of any size unless you are engaged with charities or your community. And it's for two reasons. The first is that your employees want to work for an organization that has a line outside making profit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other reason is the public expect a company to have a life. And it is true, actually, these statistics come that given an alternative choice between one company and another, 80% of people choose to buy from a company that has a life outside making a profit, what we call profit and purpose.
Love it.
So,
yeah.
And funny enough, the biggest reason that they do it for their staff is because it increases job satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all sort of blue-eyed, you know, charity giving. They're doing it for business reasons. Proves the staff, retention of staff, recruitment of staff, and it makes them and improves internal communications for lots of business reasons. So now, almost, I mean, if you think in this country, think about innocent smoothie people,
yeah.
Think about Pret a Manger,
yeah.
You think about, they're all actually actively engaged in helping the community, and the resources the company can bring to helping a community are really significant and substantial. So if you're out there and you're running a business and you're not engaged, you need to get a grip.
You need to get a grip, as Mike says. Need to get a grip. Be sure to check out WizKids. Be sure to check out the Rainmaker Foundation. That's .org. And be sure to check out Mike's book at ourgenerousgene.com. This is Amy Hackett Jones of Being Brilliant with Mike Dixon, philanthropist extraordinaire.
Thank you very much.
And he's all about generosity. So I really urge all of our listeners to go out there today and start exercising your generous gene. We gave you 5 tips on that earlier on in the show. Be sure to go back and re-listen. And it's been a huge pleasure, Mike, to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
It's lovely. I hope I get the opportunity to interview you one day.
I hope so too.
Exactly. We must make it.
And as for those business ideas, I think we should start putting them into plan, into action. Thank you very much. This was Amy Hackett-Jones of the Being Brilliant radio show. See you next time.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Torch on Fire Radio.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can seem intense. Like breakup R&B intense.
I thought you said you love the sweater that I got you. If you didn't, you could have told me.
Geico makes it easy. Just go to Geico.com anytime to update or check your policy without all the extra drama.
I even had a gift receipt.
Imagine a country where jobs are plentiful and families can get ahead. A country where veterans are treated with dignity and respect. A country so powerful, terrorism is in retreat. Our families safe. A country run by a leader whose career was built on success. A leader who isn't beholden to special interests, but to the people themselves. Make America great again. Donald Trump for president.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.